It's well known that young people who during high school attended church and even youth groups drop out of any religious observances once they reach college. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, Director of Distance Learning at Wyoming Catholic College, and your host for these After Dinner Scholar podcasts. The conclusion most people reach is that we lose our children in college, but it turns out that's not true. We lost them way back in junior high, and they went to church during high school because we expected them to go. Once in college, they had the opportunity to leave, and they left. That, of course, leads to the question, how did we lose them in junior high school? The answer too often is they had questions, and we didn't have answers. Specifically, they had questions about the relationship between faith and science, with the result that they thought that they had to choose between the two. When they chose science. The faith versus science dichotomy, however, is as false as it is pernicious. And Wyoming Catholic College Associate Professor of Philosophy, Dr. Michael Bolin, works through the arguments each year with our students as they consider the question of evolution. Dr. Bolin is our guest this week on the After Dinner Scholar. Dr. Bolin, the notion that there's some vast gulf between faith and science is a relatively new one. Tell us a bit about the long coexistence of the two and how they became separated.
Yes. Well, first, I would definitely agree the idea is relatively recent. Historians think it largely developed in the 19th century by a couple of fellows named Draper and White. And indeed, the idea that there's a war, a conflict between faith and science is sometimes called the Draper-White thesis. But yes, long before that, the medieval Christendom was very much one of a proponent of, even the vanguard, the foundation of science. There's a whole school at that time coming from the idea that because creation is God's creation, it must be rational, and therefore it must be intelligible, able to be understood. And so therefore the project of understanding it by our natural reason is something they're very interested in. St. Albert the Great, sort of one of the patron saint maybe of scientists, is quite emphatic that the task of natural science is understanding nature in its own terms. It's not just trying to impose religious doctrines on it. And so, yeah, it is a new thesis. It's post-Enlightenment. Medieval Christians would not have seen such a conflict.
Well, and I had a friend, a Presbyterian friend, who went to a Vatican conference on bioethics and biotechnology. He said it was jaw-dropping how many smart, intelligent, learned men there were there, all of whom were wearing collars.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've met Christians and Catholics who were surprised to learn that the inventor of the Big Bang Theory was a Catholic priest, Father Georges Lemaître. So.
These questions of faith and science come to a bit of a head over not only Leibniz's question, why is there something rather than nothing, but the further question, how did it all get here? Can you explain how the questions of origins, origin of the universe, human life, brought about skepticism regarding faith?
A lot of scientific understanding about origins, that is also relatively recent. Cosmology has not, astronomy have not been in a very developed state for more than 100 years, 150 years. Historical biology, evolutionary biology, that of course is a 19th century and later invention. And so prior to that time, even though, as I said, Christians are definitely interested in understanding the world, they just don't have the knowledge to see clearly the physical origins of things. And so there's been an assumption that, you know, the story we find in Genesis chapter 1, God created the heavens and the earth, was perhaps strictly literal. If no one has any data to tell them otherwise, that's not today how the Catholic Church reads it. It's more deeper and more theological, not a science textbook. But in some ways, I couldn't fault them for that. If you have no data to the contrary, then maybe the world was created in 6 days. I should add that even back then, Christian exegetes knew that you didn't have to read the Bible that way. St. Augustine is quite clear in his work on the literal interpretation of Genesis that there are different ways to read it. Some of them are more literal, some are less literal, and none of us should be too quick to impose his own interpretation on as the definitive interpretation of the text. So I think that you have this tradition of maybe just assuming without thinking too much about it that the Christian creation stories were to be taken strictly literally. But that was never really a question until more scientific data came up in the 19th and 20th centuries indicating that maybe that's not the case.
And that's where Darwin comes into this whole question.
Darwin's the bad guy from some perspectives. The one, of course, the well-known as the founder of the theory of evolution. I think we kind of naturally misunderstand the relationship between God and creation. So we think if God made man, God made the creatures, then nature didn't make them. And Darwin comes along and says, well, it looks like nature may have made them. And so there's a tension arises. Was it God or was it nature? But that itself is a kind of misunderstanding of the relationship that God has to his creation. It's not either or, but everything that is, whether it's made through nature or if it were made miraculously, either way, it's made by God. So we say, we profess in the creed, we Christians, Catholics, God is the maker of all things. Right? God's the maker of this microphone in front of me. But that doesn't mean that the microphone didn't come to be through some man-made process, some nature made the products, man made the microphone. But ultimately, God is the maker of all of it. And so, even though there might superficially seem to be a conflict forcing you to choose either God or nature, that's not really true, and it's not the way the Catholic Church interprets it these days.
In your experience, what questions do students have about faith and science as you begin going through the issue of human origins and evolution?
I would definitely say they have some of those questions about, I was just mentioning, about how does this fit with the creation story in Genesis, or what does the Catholic Church teach about this? And we read some texts, Pius XII, Humani Generis, some more recent texts from John Paul II and Pope Benedict. So they end up with an understanding that the Church is not really opposed to evolution, but they do have that question to begin with. It's in the culture. And they might ask, well, how do human beings get their souls? If indeed human beings share an ancestry with animals, does that mean we're not really any different? What does it say about the origin of the human soul? And that questions like that. So they have many theological questions. They're pretty interested in just the scientific aspects of it as well. That is, what do we see out there in nature that would incline us to believe this at all? What's the scientific evidence for it? That's another big thing. So it's kind of a mix. Theological, philosophical, scientific questions. The question about what kind of creator is God in that case? Why would God choose to do this? Why would God choose to create with an evolutionary process? Doesn't that seem kind of ugly? Like eons of death and destruction involved? And so that's also a question we spend some time tackling. Is there something, could there actually be something more noble, but harder to see behind this? So I would say there's a variety. They're all great questions.
So many of the critiques, I think, of evolution that I've heard is that it's evolution equals chance plus time. God out of the question. Mm-hmm. I assume that you don't believe that.
Yeah, I think the missing ingredient or the missing term in the equation there is nature. That is, nature is not just chance. It's very orderly. It acts for an end. It has a finality, a purpose to it. And so St. Thomas Aquinas, for example, says that nature just is the divine art placed in things. And so if God chooses to create by an evolutionary process, he's going to give nature the tools it needs to do so. It's not chance apart from his intention. And so you might say, there's a whole debate, right, between there's creationism, but there's intelligent design as in the evolutionary camp. But I would say that even a fairly mainstream interpretation of evolution could be understood to be intelligent design. I wouldn't necessarily identify with that school that the public knows by that name, but I would definitely say, no, God's intelligence is in nature. It's not just chance and time. There's finality and purpose. God made nature so it would do this because he wanted us. So,
right. Well, and the intelligent design advocates who I know were, you know, that's exactly what they believe. How it happened, the mechanism, well, that's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. The point is, there was a final cause. There was an end to this, and it was directed, and God directed it.
Yes, there's one of the pieces I read with the students is actually the homily that Pope Benedict gave at the Easter Vigil Mass in 2011. And in that homily, he says, these questions about the details of origins, they're kind of beside the point. The real question is, what's at the very root of everything? Is it intelligence Is it love or is it just chance? And yeah, at the very root of things, I think we ought to say, we've got to say, it's intelligence, God's intelligence and love. I just don't think that necessarily excludes an evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, exactly. As opposed to the reigning myth about how faith and science are at war, how do they mutually reinforce each other?
I think maybe one way to answer that would be to come back to the question of the creation story in Genesis. Even if one interpreted it in a strictly literal way, and I don't think that's the right way to do it, but even if you did, there would be a lot of gaps in the story. It's still pretty general. And so you'd say, well, if this is what God revealed, maybe I can flesh out more details by my own investigation. And in a way, that's what science is trying to do. Now, I think the story is deeper and more theological. It's saying something not about, it's not an attempt to be a science textbook, but to say something more fundamental about how everything, regardless of how it comes to be, comes from God and has a goal, namely sharing in God's rest at the end of the story. And so I'd say theology gives us a framework. It tells us in general and very important terms why anything is here and that it has a relationship, a kind of beginning in God, and it has an end in God, and that's very important, and say that it's a product of his wisdom. But I don't think theology gives us all those historical details, what exactly happened 65 million years ago, or what killed the dinosaurs, right? The only thing that can give us that is natural investigation. And so I'd say they're complementary in the sense that God, in his revelation, gives us a framework, the most important things that we need to know to live our lives, but he doesn't tell us everything there is to know. And if we want to know that, to go flesh out that side of the story, we need to work at it. And it seems to me that the progress, contrary to the common story, the progress of science has borne out the idea that everything comes from God and has a kind of goal to it. I've heard it said that originally, when the Big Bang theory, for example, was first proposed, there were some scientists who resisted it because it made it sound too much like a theological story, that there was a definite beginning in time, and which is quite striking, because it's kind of an inversion of what you usually hear, right? So yeah, I think that history bears out that mutually reinforcing relationship. There's an astronomer, Robert Jastrow, who considered himself an agnostic, but nonetheless, despite that, considering himself an agnostic, he said that he too thinks that the progress of astronomy and cosmology has borne out sort of the Judeo-Christian creation narrative. And he interpreted the Big Bang story that way. And he had this wonderful metaphor where he says, he portrays the scientist as laboriously scaling this mountain of knowledge and spending years trying to get to the peak of it. And when he arrives at the peak, he finds a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries, says Jastrow. And it's funny, but kind of beautiful.
St. John Paul II began his encyclical about faith and reason with these words, quote, "Faith and reason are like two wings on which the human spirit rises to the contemplation of truth," close quote. Through our undergraduate college, through PEAK, our summer program for high school students, and with events like the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought this June, we at Wyoming Catholic College educate and encourage both faith and reason. We believe that they go together. And we believe that since all truth is God's truth, we can and should fearlessly search for truth through theology, philosophy, art, literature, mathematics, science, and prayer. Thank you for being part of that quest through your participation in these After Dinner Scholar podcasts. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.